where we came from, where we've been. They're eternal questions that say a lot about where we're going as the human race. Welcome to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. Welcome to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And I've always been fascinated by the idea of giants. Did giants actually exist? Well, we're going to talk to someone who has just written a book on some giants, the red-haired giants of Lovelock Cave and other ancient mysteries. And our guest today is Floyd Wills, and we're so glad to have him with us. He has a BS degree in human development and holds certifications in hypnotherapy and neuro-linguistic psychology. His investigations into sacred sites, ancient civilizations, and out-of-place artifacts have led him across the globe, and he currently lives in Washington State, and we're so glad to have him with us today. Floyd, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Jim. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate that, and thank you to your audience as well. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm always interested in origin stories, and one of your certifications is in neuro-linguistic psychology. And that sounds pretty heavy. So how, and not that the ancient mystery topic is not heavy. It has a lot of implications, and it's a very intellectual pursuit. But how did you, from those areas of specialization, how did you get into this investigation of ancient mysteries?
Well, I've just always had a fascination with psychology and the subconscious mind. And I've always been a person that just loved to learn about things, learn about my own mind, and learn about the ancient mysteries around us. From when I was a young kid, I used to watch In Search Of back in the 80s.
Me too. I'm right with you, Floyd. That's what started for me. Yep.
Yes. So talking about Atlantis and UFOs and the paranormal and just all that stuff has just always fascinated me. And I've traveled around to a number of different countries, and it just seems like wherever I went, I always ended up going to some mysterious place or sacred site.
And that is interesting. So many people that I talk to who are investigating these mysteries or hosting podcasts or whatever, but go back to that show. They go back to the show. When most people think about Leonard Nimoy, they think about Star Trek. And obviously, I think most people our age are Star Trek fans. I'm a Star Trek fan. But for me the first thing I think of is In Search Of, because that show lit the fire of many young people and people who are still pursuing these mysteries today. Whereas I'm guessing when they did that show, they thought, oh, it's a little syndicated show. It's no big deal, you know. But it really changed a lot of people's lives, including mine.
It did.
Now.
Mine including.
Yes, yes. So you talk about these red-haired giants of Lovelock Cave. I guess the first question is, tell us about Lovelock Cave. What is it and where is it?
Lovelock Cave is in Nevada, and there has been a tradition amongst the northern Paiutes of these red-haired giants that lived in the area, and they were known by various names. One of them was called the Satika, which means tule eaters. And tule is a plant, like a reed. And these giants would make boats out of these plants. They would eat the roots. They would make basketry out of tule, a number of different things. And the red-haired giants, they were cannibals, and they were very violent. And they attacked the neighboring tribes, and they would actually eat the other tribal members. And finally, the Paiutes banded together and they cornered these giants at Lovelock Cave and shot flaming arrows. They cornered them in the cave, threw brush in front of the cave, and then lit them on fire and killed off the giants. And some of the Paiutes believe that some of the red-haired giants did escape. Not all of them were killed. So there's this long-standing tradition of the Paiutes of these red-haired giants. And even amongst most of the other Native American tribes, you will hear in their oral traditions about giants.
Now, when we're talking about giants, there's giants, then there's giants. Are we talking about 7, 8 feet tall, 10 feet tall, 15 feet tall? And again, I don't even know if that's something you would have the data on. seeing that this is from an oral tradition, but what is the sense that you get? How large were these red-haired giants?
I would say over 7 feet tall. And what fascinated me about this particular story about Lovelock Cave, which is in Nevada, is that there are artifacts that you can still see that came out of the caves. And there were skulls and other skeletons. Some of them had long red hair still attached to the skulls. Many of those disappeared, but there was a little museum in Winnemucca that ended up with some of the skulls, and they kept them in the basement. And you had to ask to actually view these things. So I would say the red-haired giants, I believe, were probably in the 7 foot or taller range, based on the research that I've done. And in my book, I actually have a picture of one of the large skulls that allegedly came out of that cave, and it still has some red hair attached to it. And it also has extra teeth. A medical term is called supernumerary teeth.
Uh-huh.
So extra teeth, I'm sure if you're familiar with any kind of talk of ancient giants, you will hear about some of the giants having double rows of teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the Bible, it talks about a giant that had a double row of teeth, and it had 6 fingers on each hand and 6 fingers on each toe. And in some of my research on the Lovelock Cave and other ancient giant skeleton discoveries in America, I found some instances where the skeletons did have double rows of teeth. And in a few cases, even 6 fingers on each hand.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Now, so there's some physical evidence here to back this up with these skulls, right?
There is. It's very hard to come by. And that's why I was so attracted to the Lovelock Cave story, because there is photographic evidence of some of the giant skulls, and as well as artifacts. In addition, a sandal fragment came out of that cave that was over 17 inches in length. And if you translate that to shoe size, that would be about a size 29 shoe.
Whoa.
And I think the record shoe size is 22 or 23. It was held by an NBA basketball player.
Those are some expensive Nikes.
Yes.
My goodness. So,
yes, indeed.
I mean, when I think about mainstream archaeology and so forth, and their thoughts about a lot of these things, it is my, and I don't know for sure, I want to get your clarification on this, since you're the expert, I am not. But that a lot of this stuff is poo-pooed, that that a lot of it is either faked, or it's some kind of animal, or it's some kind of human with some kind of, for lack of a better phrase, deformity. Is that the case? Does mainstream archaeology, anthropologists, do these people kind of poo-poo this idea? And your thoughts on that?
I think they do. Now, I mean, there are some cases where there were probably hoaxes or misidentification of skeletons. But in my research, I've come across so many articles of these reports, and some of them with many consistencies with them, that I do believe there are many of these that are true. And yes, I believe mainstream does poo-poo this. I think it's based on a knowledge filtration system that basically anything that doesn't fit in with, you know, their ideology is just, their paradigm is just filtered out. It's just filtered out. It's, you know, put off to the side. It's discredited. Because if we're talking about giants here, ancient giants, then that is much different than what we've been conventionally taught.
Oh, I know I've interviewed in the past people who have claimed, and I'm not saying they're right, but I'm people who have claimed that the Smithsonian, for example, has covered up information about giants and the existence of giants. So you believe, if I'm correct, that there probably is some kind of cover-up involving giants.
Absolutely. I do, and I point to a few examples in the book. Particularly, there was a discovery in Arizona. A gentleman found a giant skeleton on his property, and the skull was so huge that it was in the article, it said beyond human comprehension. And it mentions in the article that the Smithsonian dispatched some agents to procure the skull. And, and they took photographs of the skull, but the man actually refused to turn the skull over to them. And there's another example that I referenced called the San Diego Giant, which was an over 8 foot tall alleged giant that was found by miners in San Diego. I believe this was in the late 1800s. And the Smithsonian dispatched an agent to procure that giant. And they actually paid the owner $500, which is the equivalent of $15,000 today, to obtain that giant, which they later claimed they did laboratory testing and said it was made out of gelatin and it wasn't real. So the question is, if the Smithsonian believes that there was never such a thing as giants and they didn't exist, why are they, you know, paying money to go procure these things when they're found?
Interesting. Now, this red-haired giant, I want to get back to it a little bit. In the oral tradition, was it said that this was a fierce warrior? Was it a gentle giant? What kind of giants were we talking about?
They were described as fierce. They were described as barbarians, very fierce in battle, to the point where when arrows were shot at them, they would actually retrieve the arrows that were shot at them and fire them back.
Wow! That's a tough giant.
That's a tough giant. So they were very mean. They were mean, contemptible, and they were cannibalistic. And they would sometimes lay traps. They would dig pit traps to catch unwary travelers, and they would eat them, even going so far as to dig up the dead and eat them.
Wow. Do we have any recounting of how they went off the scene? Did the record just stop of them? Did they die out? Any thoughts about their ultimate ending spot?
Sarah Winnemucca, who was the daughter of Chief Winnemucca, who was very influential over in that region, in her memoirs, she briefly talks about the red-haired giants and said that they were killed off by her people, and that she even has a mourning dress that has the red hair of the giants attached to that dress. So according to Sarah Winnemucca, the Paiutes killed off the last of the red-haired giants.
So in the book, the title is The Red-Haired Giants of Lovelock Cave and Other Ancient Mysteries. What are some of the other ancient mysteries that you talk about in the book?
Yes. As I was looking through these articles, old articles on giant discoveries, I stumbled across anomalous discoveries of little people in North America. And I was kind of stunned by that. And I came across a number of different articles. One in particular I referenced in my book, in Tennessee, there's a lot of native tradition about the little people. And on a farm, there was discovered over 100,000 little skeletons that were no taller than 3 feet high. And then as I started looking into that and looking into what the different native tribes spoke of in their oral tradition of the little people, I came across more and more information on them. And then I started looking at the discovery of the Flores Hobbit in Indonesia, that was made, I believe, in 2010 on the Isle of Flores in Indonesia, of a race of little people about 3 feet in height or smaller. So there are physical remains. And initially, the paleontologists were coming out and saying, oh, it's some form of disease that caused these people to be so small. But it's been proven that this was a race of little people.
I think there's a benefit to having someone like yourself, a very educated person, but maybe someone who didn't major and go down the traditional track, looking at this from kind of the outside, from a different angle than maybe people who were traditionally or classically trained. An example is, I recently did an interview. We have a true crime show, and we did an interview about a case that involved DNA and some of the newer uses of DNA. And some of the most compelling uses of DNA now were developed by citizens, by normal people who thought of different ways to use DNA and triangulate data and those things, something the criminologist would have never thought of. And I think it's the same way with something like this. Yes, do you respect the people who are in the mainstream? Certainly. Do you respect their knowledge and training? Absolutely. But I think there is a benefit to having someone, quote, from the outside looking at this. How do you feel about that?
Absolutely. And again, I go back to my example of the knowledge filtration. So if you're teaching what's commonly taught and you're in that paradigm, then you are automatically kind of conditioned to filter out any information that really contradicts what you've been taught. And I actually provide some examples in the book of that happening, one in particular with a researcher, Virginia Steen McIntyre, who was an archaeologist back in the 60s and 70s. And she had done some work on an ancient site discovered there. And she actually dated this site of human habitation going back hundreds of thousands of years, which would totally contradict what was normally taught. And she actually was brave enough to present her findings in the 80s. And as a result of that, she basically lost her career in that field.
Yeah, that's the thing. I've talked to other academics about that. If you go against the dogma, and this is in various fields, it's not just in this particular field. I think that you really run the risk of committing career suicide if you say something that goes against the dogma. And it's very sad that it exists. And again, from my viewpoint, it's not just disrespect the traditional thinkers or the people who have studied this for a lifetime and dedicated their life to it. Certainly, they have a lot of good information and a lot of great things to share and to educate. But again, a lot of times, traditional scientists in almost any field, I think, and then this goes with the other side, the spiritual side too, people believe what they believe. They put blinders on, and it's kind of like, don't confuse me with the facts kind of situation.
Exactly.
Now, going beyond this particular mystery, what's your all-time favorite ancient mystery? Because it sounds like you've looked at a lot of them.
One of my all-time favorite is the Nazca mummies. Are you familiar with the Nazca mummies?
I have heard of the Nazca mummies. Yes. Is this a few years back when they found the Nazca mummies?
In 2017.
Yeah.
In 2017 in Nazca, Peru, and many people are familiar with the Nazca region. It's known for the Nazca lines.
Yes, yes.
The glyphs, and you can only see them from an aerial viewpoint. In 2017, some jaqueros, tomb robbers, brought forth these mummies to an archaeologist that was working in Peru. He was from France, and they gave him these mummies because they were so unusual. They were unlike anything they had ever discovered before, and they felt that it was so important to humankind to have access to these mummies that they actually gave them to the archaeologist. And these mummies, most of them do not look human. Some of them are very small. They have elongated heads, no nose, no ears, three fingers on each hand, three fingers on each toe. Some of them look like a hybrid between a Homo sapien and a reptilian. There's been x-rays done on these things. They have skeletal structures. There's no evidence of incisions made in the mummies that these things were put together with animal bones mixed with human bones. DNA tests have been done on them, and there are elements of DNA in these mummies that match no known species on this planet. And I think this is a very, very important discovery.
Yeah, that's interesting. No known other DNA. That's not matching. That's amazing. Do you think that any one of these kind of situations is ever going to result in kind of breaking through the mainstream dogma?
I hope so. And I hope that the Nazca mummies is the proverbial crack in the dam that eventually breaks things open. Of course, they were first discovered in 2017. And then, of course, you know what we've been going through the past 3 years
sure.
with COVID and everything. obviously it's put everyone's focus on that area. So it's my hopes that more research will be done on the Nazca mummies, and eventually that this will be the crack in the dam to break through that established dogma.
That's interesting. That's interesting. You know, when people think of ancient mysteries, they think of outside the U.S. It's interesting. When people think of UFOs, they think of only the U.S. But when they think of ancient mysteries, they think of places like Egypt and so forth. And of course, there are plenty of, or Göbekli Tepe. And of course, those kind of places have fascinating mysteries behind them. But do we take for granted, you know, you talked about this cave in Nevada, or Nevada, I should say Nevada. Mm-hmm. And I think about in my neck of the woods, I'm from Ohio, and in southern Ohio, we have these great mounds. It seems to me that we have a lot of ancient mysteries right here at home in North America, don't we?
Absolutely. Are you familiar with Fritz Zimmermann's work? He did the Nephilim in the Ohio Valley.
Oh, yes.
Yes. He talks about actually giant skeletons being found in some of those mounds. And I do reference his work in my book as far as he believes that the giant skeletons, they were the Amorites from the Levant in the Middle East, and that they were seafarers, and that they would travel and they would mine tin and copper. Obviously, because that makes bronze, and they were active during the Bronze Age, and they sailed to England, and they even came to North America and did some mining here. And his theory is that some of those giants came to North America, and they ended up interbreeding with some of the Native American tribes here. So yes, we have many, many mysteries here in North America, and it really opened my eyes when I was doing the research for this book. Just how many that we do have here.
It is interesting. I got to tell you, it kind of makes me laugh because I remember when I was in college, I helped produce a documentary that was later played in Ohio schools about those mounds and Serpent Mound and the mounds in southern Ohio. Really kind of a neat project to work on, being a college student, getting paid and getting to write a documentary. You know, that was kind of cool. And this is before the internet and everything. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that was played for several years throughout Ohio schools. And it followed the mainstream line on the mounds and everything. But I remember talking to, I believe it was the director of anthropology who was kind of overseeing this. And I brought up the topic of von Däniken and ancient astronauts, because this was well before the Ancient Aliens TV mm-hmm. show and all of that. But certainly von Däniken had been around for years. And he looked like, he looked at me like I had done something to his soup. I mean, I was just asking the question. It wasn't that I was saying that, you know, aliens made Serpent Mound.
Right.
I just threw it out there. It was not, well, I mean, he didn't like bite my head off or anything, but he just kind of looked at me like I had done something that you wouldn't do in polite company. And that's just kind of the feel that you get, and kind of along your lines, that people who bring these things out, they have some definitely career risk. So, I mean, what can the average person do who's interested in this? Maybe they don't have a PhD. Maybe they have an interest. How can they contribute to the field of research while being safe and legal and all those good things?
Sure. Well, in my book, I cite all of my sources. So my goal is to leave breadcrumbs for other people that are interested and that can pick up and just take off where I left off and just go do your own research, you know, find some good books on the subject and look at the references and find out where that information came from and go do your own research. A lot of my research with the giant started with a presentation done by researcher Jim Vieira. He writes a lot about giant skeleton discoveries, and he really inspired me to look into this. And then I started going online and looking at old newspaper databases, and I started compiling article after article of giant skeleton discovery. So that would be my suggestion. Another aspect to my book is I actually do have a dialogue with an anthropologist from the Nevada State Museum regarding the Satika. And he does actually provide me some information about them, and he seemed to be quite open-minded. But it gets to the point where I start asking more and more questions, and then the communication just cuts off, and I don't get any more information, and I don't know what the reasons why, and I can just speculate on that. And so I include some of the dialogue that I have with him in the book. And it's by no means saying that he agrees with my theories on the red-haired giants, but it is interesting. He is open-minded, and he does provide me with some very interesting information.
Interesting indeed. Well, we've had a very interesting discussion. We've been talking about ancient mysteries with Floyd Will, specifically his new book, The Red-Haired Giants of Lovelock Cave and Other Ancient Mysteries. Floyd, where can people find the book and more information about everything you do?
Go to bookbaby.com, and there's a bookshop on that site. And I would encourage, if people are interested in the book, to go there, because BookBaby really supports self-published authors like myself. In addition, you can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Barnes & Noble. I have a website called theancientgiants.com. And you can also find out some more information about my research and a little bit more information on my background as well.
Very good. Our guest has been Floyd Willis. The book is The Red-Haired Giants of Lovelock Cave and Other Ancient Mysteries. We'll also have it linked at the website and in the show notes. Floyd, thank you for joining us today.
It's been a real pleasure, Jim. Thank you so much. And thanks again to your audience for tuning in. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, thank you, sir, and thank you for tuning in to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. We appreciate it, and I'm sure Floyd would agree. Keep exploring those mysteries. Bye-bye, everybody.